This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You are listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. Coming up over the course of the next hour or so, we will allow you the opportunity to ask our next guest questions. So if you like, text line 913-576-7610. Start putting them into the fold. We will ask our next guest questions over the next hour or so. We're very happy to be welcomed in studio right now by Mitchell Shorts. I don't know if calling you like former Chiefs or former NFL player, I don't know the like correct term to call you. So I'll just call you Mitchell Shorts for right now.
Yeah, I was thinking about that myself. I'm not quite sure what to call me now other than just like NFL offensive tackle. I think that's the way to go, or offensive lineman. Former Chiefs always sounds good, though. I think that'll be a nice little moniker for forever.
Let's start with like the most softball question. How are you doing? Like, how do you personally feel? How are you right now?
I'm definitely getting better. It's nice to get back to like being up, being active. You know, people that follow me on social media know I like to cook, and so the first month, you know, 5-6 weeks of surgery rehab, wasn't able to be on my feet too long, wasn't able to cook. So I'm finally getting back to that, which is really exciting. But it's just, it's cool to see the progress. You know, the first month or so of rehab, it's very incremental. You know, you go from everything being difficult to do, everything hurting, to getting a little bit better, a little bit better. You know, the past few weeks, it's a big progression in terms of what you can do, all the movements and, you know, strength stuff coming back. So definitely getting better. It's exciting to be on that path and kind of get to the point where you can get excited about the progress.
So you started every game in your career from 2012 up until this season. When was it that you realized that something was off? Like, you know your body, you know the typical pain that you got to play with as an NFL player. This was obviously very different. When did you realize that something was off?
Honestly, not till that Buffalo week. You know, I had sprained my ankle a couple weeks before, so I was in there doing rehab, and my back was just tight, which isn't atypical. You know, offensive lineman over 30 years old, your back tends to get a little bit tight every now and again, but, you know, nothing that affected me. I'd practiced all the practices, played all the games. You know, I did feel a little bit of pain, which, you know, I kind of knew was maybe nerve pain down the leg. You know, that's something I was familiar with from college, which I actually had back surgery then too. So this is actually my second. And so, you know, I was like, hey, I'm kind of feeling this. I should probably get an MRI, right, just to see what's happening. We said, yeah. But I practiced in full that week, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, full practice. You know, flew to Buffalo. Everything was feeling good. You know, honestly, it was kind of pregame that things really started to ramp up, and I started to, you know, get into a lot of pain and realize, you know, I didn't feel good. My mobility wasn't good. You know, at the end of the day, it sounds kind of cheesy, but like, my job is to protect Pat. If I can't do that well, you know, I shouldn't be out there. So I realized after the first drive, you know, I played fine. I mean, if you went and looked at the film, I don't know if you could necessarily tell that, you know, I was dealing with that. But I just knew that throughout the course of the game, it was just going to keep getting worse, and I wasn't going to be able to do what I needed to do, and I needed to come out. You know, so really kind of just progressed in those couple hours from pregame through the game. It was strange because I never had anything like that. You know, everything felt good. My back didn't feel any worse after flying. It didn't feel any worse after sleeping in the bed. It just kind of all came on at once, and, you know, came out, you know, went back in the locker room, tried stretching, you know, chiropractor works on you, all that stuff, and nothing was feeling better. And it was odd to kind of have to take yourself out or to, you know, be in that situation where you're like, yeah, I need to come out. I don't think I can keep going. You know, that was a weird one for me. I didn't expect that. I'd never really had to deal with that before. So that was probably the hardest part, is just trying to make that right decision. You know, I think if I was a little bit younger, maybe I would have tried to push through it and, you know, something bad or worse could have happened to me or Pat or the team. And I think luckily I was old enough to kind of understand what I should do. And, you know, come to find out, I kind of made the right decision there.
So take us through the, I guess, between the Bills game and the end of the season, because I said this and it was just kind of based on your track record of injury health and history. I thought you were coming back after the bye week. It just felt like one of those things. You're out for a couple of weeks. You then take a bye, just like a natural break for you to come back. Obviously, that didn't happen. What were some of the things that were happening to try to see if you could get back on the field in the regular season to get ready for the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, that was the plan. You know, I think we had three games until the bye, and we didn't put me on, you know, the three-week IR because there was a chance I could have come back. I think it was Carolina was the game right before the bye. You know, there was a chance I could have come back there. We realized realistically probably needed a week or two. But then that third week, you know, there's a chance I can come back. Basically every single day you go to the facility. I mean, we had to anyway for COVID, even on the off day. But, you know, you're rehabbing every day. So you're doing some sort of physical activity to strengthen yourself, to stretch, to relieve tension, to whatever it is. So you're working every day to get better. You know, we have a great staff with, you know, Rick Burkholder and the medical team. And so they put a good plan together. You know, we weren't sure what kind of caused it. You know, you look at the MRI, you see what's going on. But I didn't have that one moment where it was like, oh, man, I really just tweaked my back, or, oh, it starts to hurt now. Because it came on gradually, because I was already dealing with a sprained ankle, you know, we thought maybe my hips were off or my alignment's off, or there's, you know, some part of the body that's working harder than another part. And if we can get it, you know, kind of back to neutral, it should go back to, you know, not being symptomatic. And so that was the idea. I mean, like you said, I didn't expect to be out the rest of the year and to need surgery. I mean, based on the images, they said, you know, some guys have what you have and never feel any pain. It just, you know, typically if you go and MRI a lot of offensive line bodies, you'll see, you know, backs that look similar to mine. I mean, we get put under a lot of stress all the time, and it's really just whether you're symptomatic or not. So I expected it to be, you know, a couple of weeks. I thought with kind of that daily rehab, giving myself a little bit of a rest and, you know, working towards getting back to neutral, it would go away. And we kind of just kept at it because, you know, you don't want to get surgery. Surgery is the last resort. And so, you know, once we kind of realized getting into the playoffs, you know, even if I did all of a sudden get better, I probably would need a few weeks to ramp up anyway. You know, we just kind of waited until after the Super Bowl at that point. So it was a long few months, frustrating. I mean, it gets very boring waking up at 6 a.m. every day to go to the facility, to do treatment, to not get to practice and not get to play, to have to watch everyone else have all the fun. So that's, you know, you don't really want to go through rehab. I think that's a little bit of a misconception of when guys are hurt, is, you know, you're actually waking up earlier, you're spending more time at the facility, you're doing more work, you know, aside from football itself.
Right now we're talking to Chiefs offensive lineman, former Chiefs. I'm just going to call you offensive lineman Mitchell Schwartz. That's how I'll settle in on that. You talk about misconception. I think there is a misconception that if you get surgeries, like a player gets surgery, that whatever the doctor says in 8 weeks, you'll be perfectly fine and you can come back and play. I think a lot of people saw maybe the timing of when you had surgery, like right after the season, and then they asked themselves, well, if he had had this surgery after the Buffalo game, would he have been able to come back and play in the Super Bowl? What do you say to people who have that question based on sort of knowing, obviously, your body and the timetable it would take for you to get back?
Yeah, I mean, to that specific question, you know, typically for a back surgery, they say it's 3 to 4 months until you can resume full activity. So, you know, 3 to 4 months and then you're full go. It's not like 3 to 4 months and you're in football shape at the end of that. So I don't think timeline-wise that would have been realistic anyway. You know, I would say that would be kind of bad medical advice to just be like, well, you're feeling a little bit of pain, let's throw you into surgery. You know, like I said, surgery is a last resort. You don't just get it and go under the knife. You know, there are complications to any surgery. It's the last resort. You know, we thought, again, because it came on in a certain way and, you know, there wasn't any sort of specific trigger, you know, it was something that would go away naturally. But yeah, I don't think if I had gotten surgery right away, it would have been realistic to come back anyway. And then, you know, again, you're kind of putting yourself in a state that isn't the best for you to feel comfortable playing football, you know, worrying about, oh, is my back going to hold up for this game, let alone it being the Super Bowl. And, you know, come to find out you're playing a pretty awesome D-line.
What was it like to watch the Super Bowl?
It was weird. You know, I had obviously watched some other games throughout the year. The thing that struck me the most is that it didn't feel like a Super Bowl. It honestly just felt like a road game. You know, I don't know if it's because the week we didn't go down there or just because, you know, it was limited capacity. It just didn't seem like it had that much energy, or especially compared to Miami. So it's odd watching the game, you know, knowing it's a Super Bowl and also not feeling like it's the Super Bowl. And then, you know, as you're watching things unravel a little bit, it just, you know, makes you wish you were out there, especially since, you know, we had some struggles up front and they had a good D-line, and just knowing that, you know, potentially you could be out there making things a little better.
I can't imagine sort of what you were feeling, just knowing the kind of player that you are and knowing the game and the situation. Like, you spend your entire life working to get to this point. Obviously, you won one and you've done it, but you want to win as many as you can. You want to participate. When did you realize that you weren't even going to be able to give it a go even for that game? Because I'm sure you were holding out hope that, hey, maybe I can still go out there, maybe participate some in the Super Bowl. But at some point, it was like, I'm not even going to play in that game. When did you realize that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Probably not till, you know, middle to end of January. Like I said, once I kind of realized that I wasn't even progressing to the point where I could, you know, run or do football activities, I was still kind of in the rehab phase. And then knowing, huh, well, you know, I got hurt, I guess, early October. It's been 3 months. You know, I'm probably not in the greatest football shape anyway. So, again, if I could do the activities that would get me into football shape, I'd still need a few weeks to kind of work yourself into it. And so it was kind of towards, like I said, middle end of January that I realized, like, huh, I guess, you know, this isn't really going to happen for me this year, which was tough. I mean, like you said, it's weird being in that situation. It's something I never dealt with before. It was new to me. I had to, you know, navigate that the best I could. And really at that point, all you can do is kind of stay engaged, you know, still have fun in meetings, you know, help out where you can. Because the biggest thing, if guys disengage and now they're kind of not mentally locked into meetings or whatever else, you can get very bored and very frustrated. And, you know, you're spending a lot of time there to, you know, really not be part of it. And so, you know, staying involved, you know, I like the coaching aspect of things. So being able to help out was still fun for me.
That's an interesting way of putting it. Are you still mentally locked into playing football? Because we play this game on the show of, like, guess how much this player's made in his career. And you've made good money in the NFL. You obviously have other interests we'll talk about over the course of this hour. But are you still mentally locked into playing football? Do you still want to play football at this level?
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever stops wanting to play. You know, there's very few guys that get to, you know, walk away on their own terms. And, you know, NFL is littered with ex-players who are bitter and disgruntled and, you know, wanting to keep going. You know, I don't think that itch is ever going to go away. You know, there's other, I like to cook. I like to, you know, people have seen I like to play golf when I'm healthy enough to do it. I like to, you know, have these other interests. You're never going to quite get that competitive burst that you do when you're lined up against Von Miller or Joey Bosa or a guy like that. And so I don't think that urge is ever going to go away, that kind of yearning for super high level, you know, competitive action. You know, for the very short term, you know, I just want to get back to fully healthy. If I don't get healthy, you know, NFL kind of moot at that point, you know, I wouldn't be able to play. So if I can get back to feeling like I'm an NFL offensive lineman and I'm healthy enough to do it, you know, then I can really start to evaluate things. But, you know, especially for people that are going through back injuries, I think day to day when you're in pain, it's difficult to think about anything other than that pain and then not feeling that pain. It's kind of hard to, you know, see yourself playing football while you're feeling it. So, yeah, just kind of going through the rehab process. I know it's, you know, a little bit of a cliche to a degree, but it really is hard to think too much about, you know, how I'm going to feel, what I'm going to want to do when I'm not feeling like I normally would in an off season and kind of ready to attack an off season.
I think you know what the next question is going to be. You're pretty good at seeing these things. So Brett Veach calls you, let's say it's August in training camp. And he says, hey, Mitch, we love you. We'd love for you to come back and play on this team. Would you be interested in coming back to play for the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's at that point, it kind of comes down to dollars and what I want to do. I mean, you know, guys are always kind of on the street in August and it just, there's a lot of guys right now. I mean, it's kind of COVID and how the salary cap played out, but there's a lot of older guys who, you know, are used to making a certain amount of money. They still want to make that amount of money, and their injury situation or their age or their usefulness has kind of declined a little bit, and they're not ready to take that pay cut. Yeah, I would obviously entertain coming back here if everything worked out health-wise and all the other sides of things. You know, for people that, again, follow us on social media, you know, we're currently renovating a house in the area. I'm going to be here long-term. It is a place that feels like home and is home for me. So I got to figure that out. You know, I know other teams have inquired. Again, I'm just kind of waiting to feel healthy. And then once I feel healthy and ready to do it, then I can seriously evaluate. But I would for no reason shut the door on the Chiefs, and I'm sure we'll talk at some point.
I was going to ask you that because you have made it pretty public about your home and that you want to build your home here in Kansas City. Is it Kansas City Chiefs or bust? Like Jacksonville, let's pick a random team. I don't want to pick some team in the division. Everybody gets mad. Like, yeah, I go play for the Broncos. So random team Jacksonville calls you and they make the exact same consideration. Hey, we saw what you did in Kansas City. You feel healthy. You want to play. Is it Chiefs or bust, or you're cool with sort of where you are in life? Or is it just you want to keep playing football and whatever provides the best opportunity, you'll go play?
I think you keep all your doors open. I mean, it's all hypothetical now anyway, so I'm not going to lock myself into one way or the other. But I mean, guys don't usually take, you know, the quote unquote hometown discount. But those are guys kind of getting that second contract. They're, you know, looking for that one shot at their payday, and they don't want to, you know, take a lot less than they think they should get to basically turn down the one opportunity of their maximum earning potential. My situation is a little different, so I definitely would kind of lean more towards Chiefs, I'd say. But it's hard to know without knowing the team, knowing the money, you know, all those kind of variables, what the line looks like. I mean, potential playability, you know, we've got a pretty solid, you know, 8 or 10 guys at this point on the line. So it's not like I would necessarily even come in like, okay, you're the starter. You know, I'm coming off back surgery. I'm going to be 32, all these other things. So, you know, that's where it comes into play as well. It's just a hard question to answer with any sort of confidence because there's too many variables. And I haven't, you know, sat down and pondered that specific question yet anyway.
You're obviously aware of everything that they've done on the offensive line. How do you think it's gone? Like, how would you evaluate the moves that the Chiefs have made this offseason at offensive line?
I think it's been great. I mean, you got Tooney, who's awesome, a guard. You know, obviously just acquired Orlando Brown, Blythe at center, you know, Larry, Kyle Long. I mean, you could probably say Larry right guard. I don't know where Kyle's going to slot in there. Obviously, he's played mostly right guard, but he's a big dude who's athletic that can, you know, probably play anywhere. You know, Remmers, I think, did a fantastic job at right tackle throughout the season filling in there. So if those are, you know, kind of your top six off the bat, I think that's a really strong top six. I mean, we still got Nick. We still got Rankin. You know, Yassir showed some stuff. Lucas is coming back. Like I said, it's a pretty solid 10 deep. You know, when you go down the roster, I mean, you know, Darrell Williams last year, I think, did a pretty good job for a rookie. And you know, mentally, you know, making all the calls, you know, physically strong dude, really competitive. So the O-line is in a really good situation. You know, I think the Super Bowl reinforced that nothing can happen without your O-line being, you know, at a certain level. Doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be the best in the league. Obviously, that would be nice for any team. But as long as, you know, all five guys are doing well, the unit's playing together, you know, there's an above average nature to the whole offensive line, I think that's when it really solidifies. And and we saw that, you know, with the Eagles a few years ago. I mean, the Patriots have always had good lines the years they've won. So the team definitely, you know, realized what happened in the Super Bowl, knew it needed to strengthen the offensive line, and I think they've done a really good job of doing that.
So coming up in about 15 minutes, I want to play some draft stuff for you. So back when you got drafted, and kind of ask you about this current draft, and we'll also let people ask you questions. There are a lot of questions coming in on the text line. I don't want to just pepper you with questions all day. So I'm going to play audio clips that I really like from the Chiefs over the last, I don't know, like 2 years or so. So we'll play like some game calls and get your reaction. Also some other stuff. So this was after the AFC Championship game. This is my favorite piece of Chiefs audio I've ever heard. This is Frank Clark. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but this is amazing.
Past two games, each game, 70 yards, over 200 yards each game. I know damn well we wanted to win the game. We let that happen. They come in here, he ran for 70 yards. They call him the best rusher in the league. We're sending this home early.
I posted the comments that you said to me, and all over social media, everybody said you better watch your back, that you're saying things that you can't cash. Everybody on social media said,
they must not know who I am yet. They're going to find out sooner or later when I got that ring on my finger. At the end of the day, we champions. AFC, that trophy that got my own and last name on it, that KC. KC, ain't no fall off. Last year, jump off sides, all that. I told him when I got here, there's no change. Look at that. We're the best.
Go join.
Have you ever heard that before?
I've heard snippets of it because I know that kind of made the rounds after. I haven't heard it in full. That is fantastic. Yeah. The first thing I was thinking when I was listening to that is that's a guy who feels very validated because he got crushed that whole week after he said, oh, we're going to stop Derrick Henry. This ain't no big deal. So someone who kind of, you know, put his actions where his mouth was, you know, the defense stepped up. That's just Frank being Frank. I mean, we've kind of seen some of the NFL films, mic'd up stuff, especially the Super Bowl. That is awesome for people to actually like see Frank in his element and as fired up as it gets.
The part where he says who makes me laugh. Who? Everybody. I don't know.
And then he called a shot with the ring too, which is pretty awesome to listen back to now. No, that's awesome. Frank's the man.
Okay, so that was maybe my favorite like game audio. I'll play a couple. So I'm going to play for you my three favorite Mahomes plays. You were obviously on the field for all of these plays. I think everybody sort of had their different moment of when they realized Pat was special. Like where Pat could be one of the five greatest quarterbacks to ever live. This was his first like, I could be John Elway moment to me. This was against the Broncos back in 2018.
This crowd crazy, making it tough on Patrick Mahomes. Broncos show blitz, a sellout blitz. Mahomes trying to keep it a drive. He's looking to the left side. He throws it left-handed to Tyreek Hill, and Hill makes the catch, and he's out of bounds at the 49-yard line of Denver. A first down, third and five. Batman's left-handed. He throws it for six with his left hand.
I love that play because it was one of those, I don't care, we aren't losing. Like, you guys weren't playing that great for the first three quarters of the game. I remember Sammy Watkins was banged up or injured in that game. Up to that point, you guys had just been rolling through teams, but that was a little bit different on the road Monday night. And then Pat just put the cape on in the fourth quarter and carried you guys, I thought, to victory. And on that play, fourth down, left-handed, that's not what a young quarterback, guy in his first year, kind of throw. What was that play like being a part of it and going back and sort of watching the film of it?
Yeah, that's nuts. So he does a lot of stuff that I don't know happens until I check Twitter after the game or until, honestly, we are offensive line coach as we're watching film. He just kind of shows a different angle like, hey, did you guys see this one? I think that was either a Sunday night or Monday night game too, right, in Denver. Mm-hmm. So it's on the biggest stage against your rival in their place. I think that was one of the first times he did something that made people say, okay, I don't know an NFL quarterback could do that. You know, his career has become littered with those moments at this point, but that was one of the first ones where people were like, oh, wow, you can actually do that. You know, now you see all these kind of crazy plays and Pat gets tagged in them because, you know, people didn't think these things were possible until he started doing them. But, yeah, I mean, that was probably the first moment that people saw, you know, his insane desire to win, you know, his ability to basically will a team to victory, put him on his back. You know, make it happen, you know, however he needs to. I think that's what people expect of him now, which is nuts that they expect him to just create some sort of magic whenever. But he made it happen. It was cool to be a part of. You know, I don't even remember if I remember him throwing it lefty. I probably didn't think he did or knew that he did at the time. You know, you're just blocking and, you know, you don't get to see these cool things. So that was, you know, one of the few bright spots last year being hurt is actually getting to watch Pat and seeing it from a different angle and realizing what he can do. But yeah, that was probably the first time he really showed everyone, you know, Chiefs fans and the nation, you know, just how special he was and, you know, what he can do on a big stage.
I remember there was a time this summer where I was like, Rand, I'm like one of those YouTube people that like you'll watch a video and then it'll take you to another video. So it came up on a Patrick Mahomes like highlight thing. And I remember watching, you know, how sometimes like you don't hear a song for a really long time. You're like, man, that song's really good. I can't believe I haven't heard it. So I hadn't watched Mahomes play since the Super Bowl and I watched this. I'm like, Mahomes is really good. Like they were just showing like all those kind of pop plays at one time. And I'm like, this isn't like normal. Like this isn't what normal people do. I want to play you this cut because This is probably my favorite Mahomes throw. So I'm a big Russell Wilson fan. He's my favorite player in the league. I would say this was the first time that like I saw Russell Wilson with like a splash of Aaron Rodgers. This was his first home game against San Francisco. He threw a touchdown pass in the back of the end zone to Chris Conley.
Chiefs lead 14-7. Mahomes in the pocket, peeling away, being rushed. Now peels back to his right, trying to keep the play alive. Pump faking, fires it late. It's caught in the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City. Chris Conley with the catch, but Patrick Mahomes with Mahomes magic. Starting left, peeling right. Three drives, three touchdowns for the Chiefs.
I watch a lot of NBA. I'm watching Steph Curry right now, and he's just doing things. I'm like, you're not supposed to be able to do that. Like, you're not supposed to be able to shoot from 45 feet back and just not touch the rim. You aren't supposed to be able to make the throw that Mahomes made on that play against San Francisco.
No, that was one I didn't see live. I was actually going in the opposite direction, trying to make sure I blocked somebody. At the time, it was...
You did well enough, I would say.
Yeah, it was the new rule, so you couldn't just, like, deplete someone going back to your end zone, so you kind of had to, like, basketball block him. But I didn't see that one till the next day or till the highlights. I didn't realize the length of throw he made. It was basically a frozen rope the entire way, the window he placed it into. That was a really special game. I mean, I still remember him being introduced, 10 touchdowns in 2 weeks, and now he's coming home for his first home game. So that was, a very special game for Kansas City and for him personally, and then that was kind of the defining play of it. Really fun one to go back and watch.
So right now we're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll let you guys ask him some questions. 913-576-7610. There's a couple more plays I want to play for you. And today's draft day. You were actually drafted 11 years ago today. So we'll get your stories about you being drafted in the NFL. Very happy to be joined by Mitchell Schwartz in studio. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We are very happy to be joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. If you missed it, Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if demanding a trade is the correct terminology, but he is certainly unhappy with his current situation. From Pro Football Talk, from a source, as of last night, Aaron Rodgers' wish list was San Francisco, Denver, and the Las Vegas Raiders, not necessarily in that order. He wanted the Packers to take the 49ers offer. He is now headed to the Kentucky Derby, so we will see what happens with Aaron Rodgers. If you missed it today, Aaron Rodgers expressed to the Green Bay Packers that he'd be fine with not coming back. He certainly is interested in being the next host for Jeopardy, so we'll see what happens with their franchise quarterback. But as of now, Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers could not be further on opposite sides. Very happy to be joined in studio right now by Mitchell Schwartz. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will take your text and read them to Mitchell coming up in just a little bit. So we're playing some audio cuts here on various Chiefs things that have happened in your career. I'm trying to get the mouse to work here. Rob, I can't believe Rob broke the mouse. So we're going through plays. I want to play this play for you. I'm sure this is probably the biggest moment that you've been a part of in your career. This is, I think, the play that won the Super Bowl. Rob, can you play Wasp for me? I don't know why the mouse just doesn't work anymore. You broke it. I don't know if you did break it or not, but you broke it.
It's always good to blame people.
And 15 for the Chiefs from their own 35. And San Francisco leading by 10. 7:13 to go in the game. Seven guys drop back into his deep zone here for the 49ers. Four-man rush, but those four are enough. Here they come. Mahomes stepping up. He's throwing long downfield for Tyreek Hill. Got it at the 20-yard line. And then spun down there, the first giant chunk of the game on third down and 15. And Mahomes guns it for 44 yards down to the San Francisco 21-yard line.
I know football isn't really defined by one play. I always say that it's defined by like 5 to 8 plays that happen over the course of the game, and whoever makes more of those plays ultimately wins the game. At that moment, I think you guys won the Super Bowl. Like, if they get a stop in that scenario, it's then fourth down. I know Pat's Superman, but the way that defense is playing, I think they probably win that game. The fact that you guys converted that and then the momentum shift that I think it created for you guys, I think you won the Super Bowl on that play. If they were doing like a documentary on Wasp, like the oral history of it, what would your part say about that moment and about that play?
Again, that's when I didn't realize what happened until after, you know, on that play.
I feel like I've watched more Chiefs football than you've watched based on some of these.
No, I've seen it all. I'm saying in the moment. Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
I know, but you're always like in the middle. You're blocking, all this cool stuff's happening around.
So it's 3-jet Chip Wasp. So I had Chip help. So the tight end was there for me. So I wasn't too stressed about that one. You know, I took my set. He chipped D. I just kind of kept setting. D kept rushing upfield. I was like, huh, he's going pretty deep here. I didn't realize Pat, you know, got to 14 yards deep. I didn't know he threw the ball like 60 yards in the air off his back foot and just kind of slung it. Looking back, and especially, you know, on the NFL film stuff, I didn't, you know, understand that moment. You just get so absorbed in it. I mean, it was 3rd and 15, and yeah, if we don't convert there, we probably lose the Super Bowl. But you don't necessarily know that. You just like, it's the next play. It's 3rd and 15. You know, hopefully he's calling a chip here, so I get a little bit of help. Going back and watching, it was awesome. You know, the next day talking to Pat about it, I was like, dude, I had no idea. You basically like flat-footed a 60-yard bomb across your body. He just kind of like looked at me, like shrugged his shoulders, gave me a little head nod. So he knew how awesome that play was, and I thought that was pretty sweet.
My favorite part of that game too, like, isn't a play. It was whenever Pat scored that touchdown, and then he gets up on the sideline, and clearly he had heard what people that was like. He was like, "You guys gotta hit me! Yeah. I'm a beast!" And like, you could tell, at least the guys on defense, like Frank Clark's over there, Tyron's over there, Chris, like everybody is really fired up. We've seen like certain parts of Pat be like super animated. I'm sure you've seen obviously way more than the rest of us. But like at that one, it was clear like his energy that day was unlike any time I had seen him before.
Yeah, lots of screaming, lots of, oh, let's go, all those types of things. You don't hear Kelsey scream that a bunch too. But yeah, going back and watching kind of the day, the highlights, there's so much more emotion than I remember from him, from those guys. The score I liked was the one where he threw it to Kelsey in the back of the end zone. And I think it was the one to get us within 4 maybe, or within 3. And Travis basically like catches it and just kind of keeps running and starts to go, you know, towards the sideline and like runs into Damien, and Damien wants to like jump and give him a chest bump. And like a big puppy dog, Travis just kind of runs into him and like headbutts him and just keeps running.
I remember that.
And I just think of Travis like this big, happy puppy dog every time I see that, because he's just like so excited and doesn't know what to do and just like runs into someone and bounces off him. So that one's probably my favorite, like, quote unquote celebration. It wasn't even a celebration. And then also Damien's touchdown where he extended the ball that they reviewed for like 17 minutes. How strong his hands must be to like extend the ball and take a full hit from, I think it was Sherman, who's a big dude, and not fumble, and the ball doesn't move at all, and he just like basically holds on to it throughout the whole thing. Yeah, all those touchdowns are pretty sweet.
So when you guys run the Rose Bowl play, I know you know the exact terminology for it. How often do you guys like do a play and you're like, man, this play ain't gonna work? And then when you go into the game, you're like, well, exactly what Bienemy or Reed told me was going to happen happened, and we executed the play and it ended up working. Like, how often does that happen?
Well, what they script usually ends up happening, that's the type of play where you just have no idea how the defense is going to align. And so we've been practicing that since May or something. You know, we introduced that in OTAs. We basically carried it most weeks throughout the year. So you kind of just get tired of practicing it and be like, all right, can we just call this already? Like, it's time. Coach always has that sense of when it's going to be time and when to pull it out. We were, 6 inches away from it being a touchdown? I mean, that would be so much cooler if, like, that's the play we scored a four-yard touchdown on 4th and 1 in the Super Bowl. It's still a great conversion. It's still a lot of fun. But it just kind of played out how they expected. I don't even remember if 49ers defended it the way we thought they would. I mean, we thought they'd basically just treat it as a bare front. And then because we're in an unbalanced offensive line, so Fish was, like, over on my side, and we didn't replace him with any other linemen, so it's unbalanced. So typically a team kind of makes the guard on that side as their center and then aligns from there. And I think they were just so – they had no idea what they were looking at. They weren't sure. They kind of just lined up, and it left a pretty big gap there. And, like I said, almost punched that in for the touchdown.
So this happened back in 2012.
With the 37th pick in the 2012 NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select Mitchell Schwartz.
Hold on. Hold on, I just got to hear this again to make sure I heard what I heard.
Booze?
With the 37th pick in the 2012 NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select Mitchell Schwartz.
Who did they want? I got to go back and look at this. Who did they want?
No, I don't. I think at that point they don't even care who's getting picked. Yeah, I think it was just crowd noise. So the funny part of that is my dad swears that. So on the broadcast, they pick me and, like, they go to commercial right away. And my dad swears that they didn't have footage of me ready to show. I'm like, Dad, they have like 550 prospects. Like, the dude from the D4 school that you never heard of, they have film on him. Like, I promise you they had film on me ready to go. It was just like commercial break. Yeah, I know.
You didn't play some obscure school. You played the Pac-12.
It's one of those parent things where they just swear that, you know, someone's out to get you and they're trying to protect you. But I got drafted and they went to commercial right away, so they didn't even talk about me for like another 5 or 6 minutes until they came back. That was nuts. I didn't expect to go that high. You know, I was slated to be like anywhere from the 5th through the 10th tackle taken. Most projections, you know, kind of 3rd round, maybe 4th round. In the 1st round, only 2 tackles were taken. So Khalil from USC and then Riley Reif from Iowa. And I was like, oh, man, you know, only 2 were taken. Typically, you know, 4 to 6 are taken. So I'm thinking, all right, well, 2 are taken. I'm supposed to be 5 through 10. This is really pushing me down to 3rd or 4th round. And the draft had just broken up into the same format we're in today. So I had no expectation of being 1st rounder. So I got to just watch it and have fun. You know, the second night, I knew that I probably wasn't going to go much in the 2nd round. I thought the earliest I'd go, Atlanta was picking at 55. And they had told me if I got down there, you know, they'd either take me or strongly consider me. I don't really take anything people say draft season for certain.
To be fair, though, they actually did go offensive line. They got Peter Kahns, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, out of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So they did go offensive line. So they might not have been lying to you.
They might not have. But I thought that was, you know, my ceiling, the highest I would go. So I had sat down, you know, flipped on the draft, you know, pick 33 to start the second day. Like a pick or two later, I saw my phone light up and it had, you know, a Cleveland area code. I was like, huh, okay. Well, I got up and answered it. And they're like, hey, you know, this is, I think it was Tom Heckert from, was on the call. And hey, this is, you know, Tom Heckert with the Browns. We're going to take you. And I was like, all right, this is awesome. And so I got chosen a lot quicker than I thought I was. And it was a really good night.
Are you one of those people who knows like all the people that were drafted around them?
I do, just because I follow football and like I got to know those people in the draft process. I'm not one that like knows all the names and keeps a checklist and like, let me get this extra set because they drafted him.
So let's see. So you were the 5th pick in the 2nd round. So St. Louis, Indianapolis, Baltimore, and Denver, they had the 4 picks before Cleveland. Who was St. Louis's pick?
Oh, I couldn't tell you any of those.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm not one of those guys.
Okay. It was Brian Quick, Kobe Fleener, Courtney Upshaw, Derek Wolfe, and then you. Oh. You were the 5th pick in the 2nd round.
All right. Well, that's some good players there.
Derek Wolfe's a good player.
Yeah.
Fleener, too. I liked him. I was really high on him coming out of college.
Yeah. He had a good run. I think he just got hurt a little bit too much, and that's always tough, especially a tight end.
So coming up, I've asked enough questions. We will let you ask questions. 913-576-7610. It is hashtag Ask Mitch. Coming up next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Yeah, he's awesome.
So, Mitch, before we get to asking you random questions, I actually do want to know your answer to this. So, Rob is a big KU fan. I cheer for Missouri. And we have this theory that whenever someone's going to get drafted and they're from a certain conference, there's always one team they always show their highlights against. So, like, if you played Oklahoma and they want to show you they always show them dominating Kansas. I was looking at Jalen Waddle, and he just is absolutely torching Missouri. Like, you don't have to do that. Like, why can't you show him against LSU? Like, show him against a good team. Who's that team in the Pac-12? Who's that team that you know, if it's, like, the top running back prospect, they're always going to show their highlights against that team?
It's historically been Washington State. They, they've had a rough go of it, and then they got Mike Leach, and then they really didn't play defense. So the Pac-10s, or I guess Pac-12 now, not too many great defenses these days. So it could run the gamut, but probably not USC, probably not like Oregon, Stanford. Those are the more physical teams.
I'm thinking about Colorado. Colorado seems like a good one to show you dominate too, because they're not like bad, but yeah, they're normally not near the top.
So they're still too new to me. So they don't, like, I guess Missouri's new to the SEC.
They're not real
so
Pac-12.
Maybe Colorado would be the team then, because they're kind of like, hey, you're just added to the conference pretty late.
I mean, you don't know how long I've been dealing with that Missouri fan. I mean, MU has been in the SEC for 10 years, and it's still like, you guys aren't real SEC. What more do they got to do in the conference to prove to you that we're really in
just
the conference?
Win a few more games.
Relax, okay? Relax. I can take that from that side. I'm not taking it from you either. All right, so we normally call this random question time. 913-576-7610. We have like 10 minutes. Now's the time for you to ask Mitchell Schwartz any question you ever want to ask him. Who is harder to block for, Alex Smith or Patrick Mahomes?
It's the same. You block for where you expect them to be, and then
how do you ever know where Pat's going to be? He's always moving and doing all
this. He's supposed to be somewhere. You just go off your defensive end once he starts running in the opposite direction. You're just like, oh, okay, I guess he left the pocket.
Text line 913-576-7610. What is your Gates order?
I typically get a lot of everything. So I like to get ribs, brisket, pulled pork, maybe a little bit of chicken, sausage. So wherever I go, I basically just get a little bit of everything. To me, barbecue is about like trying everything.
Are you a video game guy?
I used to be. I haven't played in a while.
What'd you play?
So back in the day, it was all like sports games like Madden, you know, whatever the boxing one was, like Fight Club. I wasn't big into FIFA, but NBA, NHL used to be sick. Then I kind of transitioned into like Halo, Call of Duty, Destiny. And then since then, I haven't really played too much.
What's the game that's the most popular in the locker room? Like, what are the games the guys are talking about the most?
It seems like FIFA or NBA. It tends to be the sports games, although they like to play shooters too. So Call of Duty.
Who thinks they're the best at video games on the team?
Probably Dieter or Wiley.
I've actually seen Tyreek play on YouTube. He's actually pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I think Tyreek's like actually good, though. So he's not just like...
So he just doesn't like, okay, yeah. I get you. Text line 913-576-7610. If you have a question, now is the time to text it in. When is your house going to be finished?
Hopefully sometime by the end of summer. Things are going longer than expected and more expensive than expected, which is the expectation. And then, you know, things are shut down and more expensive and all that because of COVID anyway. So we're when it's ready and we'll be excited for it.
Someone on the text line wants to know how much of Lucas Niang have you got a chance to watch? I know he opted out last year, but did you get a chance to watch him?
You know, not too much. You know, he opted out kind of before practice started. You know, we were still in that ramp up period. So I didn't get to see too much of him, just some, you know, kind of drills and other stuff. But it looked good. I mean, pass ups look good. Looked like he played with some good balance, you know, understood angles, and he's a big dude. So, you know, I'm promising for this year.
What is your favorite 30-minute recipe?
30-minute recipe? It's usually pasta. You know, pasta, you can get the water going. You know, seems like you always got some canned tomatoes or tomato sauce in the fridge. Get that going. I think you're able to pull it together quickly. It's usually stuff you have on hand, so you don't need to go to the market for.
Are you a pie or a cake person?
I'd say both, maybe one of each. Favorite pie in Kansas City, rye banana cream pie. It is awesome.
Rye is amazing.
Yeah.
I love rye. What is your favorite meat to smoke?
Favorite to smoke is brisket. It's also the most challenging, so it's the most frustrating, but I think that challenge kind of, you know, gets me, and you always after that perfect brisket. But if I had people coming over and I wanted to serve them something that I knew would be good, I'd just go with ribs.
Who's the toughest guy to block in the league?
Oh, man. My whole career, I mean, when J.J. Watt is, you know, fully healthy in his prime, I mean, you've got a guy who's 6'5", 290, who is really fast, strong, you know, shifty, all those things. I think Bosa is extremely well-rounded, too. I mean, obviously, Khalil Mack and Von Miller face those guys a bunch. That's kind of the some of those top guys.
Have you enjoyed going back and forth with Von Miller? Because, like, I feel like you guys are kind of linked in a way. Like, yeah. I know, like, you're not, but you know what I mean? Like, when people, like, think of, like, Chiefs and Broncos matchups, it's always like, well, what are we going to do? Oh, we've got Mitchell Schwartz on that side. He can neutralize him.
Yeah, I think we are linked. It is very fun. I mean, you kind of build up, like, this relationship over the years of going against each other. You know, it's funny how that narrative started that I was the one who stopped Vaughn. I'm like, well, the first game I played against him in Kansas City, I gave up 2 or 3 sacks against him.
Nobody remembers that.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny how they're like, oh, you shut down Vaughn. It's like, no, that doesn't happen. No one does that.
Air fryers, overrated, properly rated, or underrated?
Way overrated. An air fryer is just an oven. It's just smaller and it's faster, but like it's just moving air at a certain temperature, which is exactly what an oven does.
Every time I go over my mom's house, this is every time she has to make me these wings in the air fryer. I don't know what it is, but I'm telling you, the air fryer wings taste different than any. I've eaten my mom's chicken for 32 years now. It wasn't until this, every time I go over there, it's like, Mom, can you at least throw me 12 in the air fryer? Okay, I'll make some.
Okay, amazing. So I think it does it maybe a little more efficiently because there's not like all that wasted space and wasted air. But I also used it like 3 times and I tried to make salmon and it just like smoked at my house. And I was like, this sucks. I'd rather just put it in the oven. But I think people think it's like this magical thing that an oven's not. It's just, it's the same idea. It's just smaller and maybe more efficient.
This is actually a good question. Mitch, if you decided to hang up your cleats, would you rather be a commentator or a coach?
Oh, commentator. Coach, I have a lot of interest in. I don't have any interest in their hours. I don't think people realize how little sleep they get throughout the year and, you know, how stressful it is to do it and have really no control on game day of, like, what's actually happening on the field. So I think I'd have a lot of fun at coaching. I just don't know that I'd want to work their hours, and there's not really a way around that.
Do you plan on opening your own restaurant or food truck? I think you'd be really successful if you did it.
Yeah, I think down the road for sure. You know, restaurants are tricky business. COVID times are really difficult for restaurants on top of that. You know, food truck I think could be cool. I'm not sure I see myself being on my feet cooking, like hunched over for 5 hours a day on a food truck. I don't know how good that'd be on the back. I think I'd probably go restaurant when the time's right, and you know I can explore that fully. It's something I'm really interested in. It seems like a lot of people are, you know, receptive to that, and you know, at least would come to opening night.
Baked beans, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
I think there's baked beans.
It's not something I crave, or like when I go to barbecue places, it's not like the thing I go nuts for.
What's your side then? Whenever you go to a barbecue place, what's your side?
I think if the potato salad's right, I think Q39 is awesome potato salad. That's something I don't make very often. You know, beans are just like more barbecue-y flavor. And if they're good, to me, they have like kind of all the leftover like trimmings and burn ends in there. And so it's more meaty than it is like beany. But I think anything, like I said, I like to get a little bit of everything, and you got a ton of like fatty meat. You kind of need something to cut that. So whether it's like a potato salad with like good apple cider vinegar or coleslaw or like something to cut through it.
Last question here. What made you decide to make Kansas City your home? Like, you've certainly made enough money that you can live wherever you want. You didn't grow up here. You didn't start your career in Kansas City. Like, what made you decide this is where I want to build my family?
It sounds corny, but it just felt like home. I mean, it just seemed like the place to be, the place to raise our family. You know, we don't have any kids yet. We got 2 little dogs, but it's a great place to raise kids. You know, it's an easy town to live in. You know, it's not Los Angeles with all the traffic and smog and 20 million people that need to get somewhere. We know the most people here. I've got the most connections here. You know, moving somewhere else just didn't seem right to go somewhere else and basically start from scratch and not know the people that we do. So yeah, it's just, like I said, it felt like home. It kind of solidified after the Super Bowl that, you know, this is where we want to be long term. It's funny, again, you know, in one specific instance, you know, we probably would have been traveling last offseason when we started looking at houses because, you know, COVID hit and we weren't able to, you know, travel. So we, in a weird way, got lucky with the timing of finding the place that we did and, you know, it being perfect for us. And it's just, it's cool. I feel like, you know, I've got a really strong bond with the city. It's fun to see people and have people say hi and know who you are. And, you know, everyone's really respectful about it. And, you know, my wife feels the same way. And it just, it felt right.
That is former Chiefs offensive lineman, maybe future Chiefs offensive lineman, Mitchell Schwartz joining us in the studio. Mitchell, it's a lot of fun, man. We got to do this again. You got to come by. You got to take breaks from your cooking and your YouTube and all that stuff to come here and hang out with us again, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Had a lot of fun. We'd love to come back and do it again.
That is Mitchell Schwartz joining us. Coming up in a little bit, we'll update you on all of the draft rumors that are happening right now, including the biggest one. Aaron Rodgers seems very unhappy with his current employer. That's next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.